Hi, this is Linda L.C. Clements, and when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Life.
All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Some would say that racial profiling by law enforcement against minority groups has been around ever since there was law enforcement. Some would even say that it occurred in ancient Egypt with the children of Israel. You never know. But anyway, it does occur, not just in this country, but it occurs in other countries around the world. But racial profiling, is a subject that many of you listening already know. We already heard our first caller today, talking about her 8-year-old grandson and why do security guards in the store kind of give him the evil eye. That sounds like profiling right there. Anyway, this Thursday, actually a couple of weeks ago, the Sunday before last, the Indianapolis Star wrote a very long for newspapers, story talking about racial profiling, particularly people that you would not expect law enforcement to racially profile. A pastor of one of the mega churches in our city, other successful African American men with clean records just being pulled over because you're black. Anyway, there's going to be it's part of the Indianapolis Star series called Building a Safer City. And the article was Building a Safer City, Racial Profiling and Establishing Trust. The story was written by Robert King of the Star, Erica Smith, columnist for the Star, is also helping out, and there's going to be a public discussion this coming Thursday down at the brand new Indianapolis Star headquarters where Nordstrom used to be in Circle Center Mall. The event is going to be live stream on Star's website, IndyStar.com, and there's also going to be a viewing opportunity out at Light of the World Christian Church. Everybody knows where that is, 4646 Michigan Road, Michigan Road in Cold Spring. In the house are Erica Smith and Robert King of the Star. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
For having me.
So what is Building a Safer City?
That's a series we started a month or two ago regarding public safety in our city, all the different aspects, from social influences to policing to everything else that reflects public safety. This event Thursday night is one facet of that. It's a discussion of racial profiling, but it goes beyond that to also look at the issues of trust between police and the community, or lack of trust, and how that's a factor in public safety too. We all know that we need the police when we're in a pinch. If we have an emergency, we need to call them and know they're coming. Mm-hmm. We also need to know that they're going to behave in a way that encourages the public to feel confident, and that we don't have issues that have caused turmoil around the country.
On the issue of profiling, you guys pick some African American males who did not have police records, do not fit the stereotype that non African Americans and maybe some African Americans have. Oh yeah, they deserve to be stopped by the police. Starting with my good friend Pastor Theron Williams out in Mount Carmel and others. Why look at successful people?
Well, that's I was having some conversations with a few folks right after Ferguson, and it became clear to me that racial profiling climbs the social ladder. Mm-hmm. It's not just the teenagers on the streets of Ferguson or the Trayvon Martin type youth in Florida. It's lawyers and business people and pastors and folks who've achieved some success. And you know, we wanted to highlight that because, you know, some people may have the impression that this is just rough characters from rough neighborhoods who have this issue. But as it's clear from our story, that it climbs a social ladder, and the only common factor is race.
Erica Smith, what will happen Thursday evening?
Well, what we hope to do is actually not have a conversation that goes backwards. I think, well, we've had a number of forums in this town since Ferguson, and they've all been useful in their own way, but what we hope to do as an organization is to try to move forward. Yes, there's going to be some talk about some things that have happened. I'm sure there's going to be some people that are going to come that are going to have some grievances, understandably so. But the goal of the event is to try to find ways to foster better communication and a better relationship between the public and the police. Maybe that a lot of that has to do with education, both for the police and both for the community. Maybe it's just about hearing each other out. But we really want to get some tangible results from this, or at least some sense that we can actually move forward as a community and not kind of be stuck in this mire and anger that a lot of those communities.
One of the things that came up on this show a couple months ago, Chief Height was here, and over the years there has been within the community this conversation that either most or a lot or a sizable minority of Indianapolis police officers, predominantly white, do not live in Marion County. And asked the chief, you know, what the percentage was, and the percentage was relatively low. As I remember it, it was definitely under 20%, may have been far under that. How much of talking about this issue moving forward in building a safer city is it to knock down the urban myths one by one? They hire all these people from small towns and they don't even live here, when the majority of police officers do live in this county and may live in neighborhoods where maybe three or four houses down the street on the other side of the cul-de-sac, there's a black family there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely should be one of the goals, and I hope it is one of the goals of this forum, because I've heard that, you know, Height has mentioned it a few times at meetings, and so have some others from IMPD. And I do think that's something that the community doesn't entirely know. And I think there's also the perception that the police officers that do live in Indianapolis live on the outskirts of the county. They don't live in the city. And I don't think that's the case either. I think there's just a lot of perception.
Well, that means nobody has seen the police officer that lives on Delaware. As if I'm driving Delaware to the north side, mm-hmm. that's always parked on the left hand side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's not, that whoever that officer is not just there patrolling. They live around there somewhere.
Absolutely. And I can think of several neighborhoods in the city where I see that all the time. So.
239-1310, 239-1310 this afternoon's name is the forum. How does one come to the forum in the new palatial Indianapolis Star offices where I think this room is where Nordstrom's men's store used to be?
I think that's right. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't really shop in the men's store.
I'm sitting in the socks section now. It's where my desk is. But, yeah, we're at 130 South Meridian, the corner of Georgia and Meridian. There's an entrance right there at that corner. Folks are welcome to come in there. If you want to park in the mall, you can park in the for a couple bucks in the Circle Center Mall parking. So,
so it'll be less than 3 hours. So you can get in at the two dollar mall rate.
Yeah, Erica has promised it's going to be an hour and a half, and she's going to crack skulls if it goes longer than that.
And you told them all this is not a special event, and don't put the $20 tickets out.
Absolutely.
And then there's a viewing opportunity up at Light of the World.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We wanted, actually, for your story, you interviewed David Hampton, the senior pastor, and we wanted to make sure that if people didn't want to come downtown and pay, and I know that's a barrier for some people, that they could go to Light of the World and not have to worry about paying to park, being slightly familiar with the area, could just go walk in. They've been gracious enough to allow us to help us. And we hope to actually be taking questions from people via Twitter. And we're going to have somebody manning Twitter and from our end, and hopefully being able to get some questions from out there, too. So we don't just want it to be the people that are in the Star that are participating.
239-1310 with Robert King and Erica Smith with the Indianapolis Star. Let me start with Brother Muhammad Sadiq. Brother Sadiq, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Amos. And I just we want a safer city, but we can't have trust if the Star or the news makes promises and they don't keep. For example, when we're trying to get the Michael Taylor case opened back up, and one of the things that was promised to us by the news, and I understand the Star has taken over all of the news former work, they promised that if we found anything beyond what they had concluded that Michael committed suicide, they would support a thorough investigation into it. I'm just paraphrasing, not quoting.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see if they're going to live up to that, because we want to see a safer city, but it starts with trust. And you can't have trust if you make promises that you don't keep.
Brother Sadiq, do you remember who at the news said that?
It was the, I'll do better than that, Amos. I'll text you the editorial. It was done in the editorial form.
It was an editorial?
It was an editorial.
In the printed paper?
In the printed paper,
well,
but
see,
it's under the news now.
No,
keep
see,
in mind, the
well,
news,
but see,
I understand the Star and the news came, they took the same people who were with the Star came with the news.
Well, here's the good news. You know, how do you move forward? Because I've been around 40 years in media, but there's a young lady at the Indianapolis Star, or Gannett Indianapolis, who's been around, I think, 43 years at the newspaper. She's the librarian.
Okay.
And trust me, if the news printed it, she knows where it is if you got the date. She can find it.
I have the date. I have the actual editorial. I can fact you that.
And the other thing is, I bet the person that was the editor or knew the editor back in the day was Russ Pulliam, and he's still at the paper.
Okay.
He's a little older than he was back in 1987, but he's probably still around. Send that to me.
I'll send it to you, and just I'd like to know from Mr. King, if I know him personally, I'd like to know who I can contact there, I'd like to send him a copy too and get a follow-up from him. So who should I, can I send it to him, to you, Mr. King, or who? Could I know how to contact you.
Well, if it was the editorial page, you might try Tim Swarren's. You can always send it to me, and I can forward someone as well.
Yeah, but I mean, I wanted to tie it in with your effort here. I'm not sending it to Tim Swarren, but I just wanted to keep it in contact with the Safer City idea, because that's the reason why I'm bringing it up at this moment.
And for the benefit of Robert King and Erica Smith, that were not here in 1987, one could say that Michael Taylor was the Michael Brown or fill in the name of an egregious incident in African American police community relations in other cities. That was it for Indianapolis. Is that fair to describe it that way, Brother Sadiq?
I think so. I think it's excellent. I think it's a perfect way of describing it, Amos.
I heard that from several of the people we interviewed for our story, that Indianapolis has already had its Ferguson, and it was Michael Taylor.
And I think, Erica, in terms of moving forward, in terms of what you say, sometimes you can't move forward until you address, it's like Ferguson. Mm-hmm. In order for Ferguson to move forward, they've got to address the circumstances around the whole Michael Brown thing.
Yeah, and I think that's an issue that I think that happens a lot with these conversations, where people don't know where to draw the line for the past and moving forward to the future. So that's something we're going to have to be walking.
If you send me the link or information, particularly Brother Sadiq, not the full editorial, just know what date it was published. Trust me, the lady that's the institutional memory now at the Star knows where to find it, and then she can share it with the folks down there.
Okay, and I'll be there at the forum, and then I'll hopefully get a word with him, with Mr. King at the time, and see where we can go from there to make it a safer city. I hope that promise will be fulfilled.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you. See the things we learn on this program, 239-1310, 239-1310. Because if it was printed in an editorial, that's on the record. Let me go to Brother Rod Bohannon, and then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How you doing, sir?
Fine.
Again, let me say to your guests, while I enjoyed the story, I have a number of issues. For background context, you remember, Amos, when I was the local branch president, we sued DWB, if you don't know what they're driving while black, in Carmel. So this is not the first time this year racial profiling has come across this community. And so my second point is that, one, I'm not sure what you're going to do with the story, what you're going to do with the data. And I would like you to be able to kind of explain to us what you plan to do with the data. Or what do you plan to do in terms of these policy changes? Second one, though, are you going to be the driving force to look at statistical data in terms of throughout the different counties? Because, you know, when I was president of branch, and since I have left being president of branch, the NHP continue to get complaints, not just in terms of professional folks, but just folks in general, in Jackson County, in Avon, in Brownsburg. I know, Amos, you also hear it on your show. So the question becomes to the two reporters, what do they plan to do beyond it? Do they plan to do the statistical analysis to look at each police department and try to figure out what's with that? My third point is that I would hope that you would decouplize your phrase in terms of safer cities, profiling, and trust, because each of those are different significant entities themselves. when you look at terms of racial profiling, that doesn't necessarily have to do with safer cities. It has to do with the policy and practices that in itself, you know, make people feel untrustful of the police. That may have a connection, but not the three together. And second, the issue in terms of trust, in terms of how you build that, that has to do with a lot of kind of things separate apart from racial profiling. So I would hope that if you're going to look at this, that you separate it out, make the issues different, do the kind of investigate around those issues separately, because they're not the same. And if you continue to add it together, you're going to get confusion in terms of trying to any policy change that you may be trying to drive to.
Well, let me ask you this. I sort of see your point there. I appreciate your call. If the community doesn't feel like they can trust the police, if they feel like calling the police isn't with the information that might lead to arrest on a drug dealer going down the street or whatever, if they don't feel that trust, I mean, isn't that an issue that affects public safety?
Well, it may, if the question turned to why people in terms of a long-term community practice in terms of what we call snitching has a lot to do with in terms of whom the police department you trust. When I first came to this community, there was a whole bunch of old black police officers that everybody went to. They trust them because they came from the community. They were involved in the community. You know, when I was president of NAACP, I can share information back and forth with them. They can share information back and forth with me. That was the same thing when Sam Jones was the Urban League and then his successor with Joe Slash. The issue in terms of building trust is a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what this is about. Your comment had to do with racial profiling. I am glad that you chose to go deal with professionalism, because every time we complain about the racial profiling, everybody said, well, usually it's those thugs, it's those people, they're unprofessional, they ask for it. So your article at least raised the question in terms of that it's prevalent enough that folks who should not be targeted because they have a brand new car or because they look professional, had a suit on, but still got targeted, said there's a real major problem in terms of how this police department, not just Marin County, but we're talking about Johnson County and Carmel, because I hear from folks who live in Carmel, who live in Fisher, who get stopped and ask why. And just to relay it to me, I got stopped a couple weeks ago going to CVS. And when I asked the officers why, he gave me some nonsense about he thought that my car might have been stolen. I said, my beat-up truck. You know, great. And so, you know, he just said, have a nice day and pull off. So I knew that was about. I saw him when I made the right-hand turn from the light. He was behind me. And I said, okay, he's going to pull me over. So when I pulled the CVS at the store, he's right behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I heard him on his walkie-talkie coming back and said that everything was kosher, that they said his place is registered, he has no outstanding warrant, he has no tickets, and who it was. And when I asked him why, he just said, I thought maybe your car was stolen. But that was all nonsense. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you raised the issue in terms of that people are professional, what's happened to them. But to me, I would urge you to separate out, because the issue of racial profiling is different in terms of, you know, a community standard, as we put in terms of, do you, you know, snitch to the police department? Do you share information? That's a different issue.
Well, I hope you'll come Thursday night and share those and other thoughts.
Well, unfortunately, I have that the same day of my founder day of my fraternity, so
okay.
I will not.
Send him an email. Anyway,
okay.
All right, we appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after news name. We'll take a break. More on building a safer city, racial profiling, and establishing trust. It's a forum. This Thursday, Indianapolis Star is doing 7 o'clock at the Star's new headquarters, where Nordstrom used to be, 130 South Meridian Street, where the big sign says Star. Simple. 239-1310. 239-1310. Afternoon's name is Moore after these.
Hello, this is Maggie Lewis, president of the City County Council. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
All right. Back to the phones. 239-1310. 239-1310. All right, Robert King and Erica Smith get to hear from Larry. Hi, Larry.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Well, you know, this is so immaterial. That's why they're talking about it. They know that they have no power to do anything about the social profile or whatever they're talking about. Because why? Because it don't mean anything to us. What we need is jobs, Amos. All they're doing is trying to demur from the facts. And that trying to make the Star look good, and that's going to have a hard time trying to do that. But they're in there. They're young people, I suppose. They sound like they're young. But profiling is nothing but a good thing for us. It's good. Why? Because the minister was pulled over. Bohannon said he was pulled over. That lets them know that even though that they're professionals, they still got black skin, and nothing's going to change that unless they take a milk bath or something. So Erica Smith and the one boy that's in there, hey, you're wasting your time because there's nothing you can do about racial profiling unless you turn everybody white, and we have a homogenous city, which is the Lord's the only one that can do that. So I just think you should be ashamed, and you should stick to your code as journalists and report the truth and stop lying and misleading people.
All right, let me go to William at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, Amata. My question is this here. Since the police has such a power, all kinds of power within just that one policeman, I'm looking at the hiring practice here. Mm-hmm. Why can't when you hire a policeman that has that much judgment over a person or whoever they stop or whatever, that before they hire this person, they ought to give this person a polygraph test to see where they are at in with ethnicity, of color and everything. That means all of them, not just whites. Well, it goes to the Mexican police, the black police, all of them to see where you are at. Because, see, if you don't get to the mentality of a person's mind, well, you're wasting your time, like Larry there, but you're wasting your time because you got to get to that mental part of that person. How do you feel towards this person here? And that's where it all comes into play. I went through all that stuff out on my job. I was the first electrician ever, after all them years out there at Avon, black electrician. When I went in that office, I said, guy, why haven't I been promoted to one of these jobs? He said, what makes you think you can do that type of work? That's the question I was asked. But I proved it to him that I could do it, and I went beyond that because I went on to school and took up that trade and done everything. But the point of it is, see, when you got a thing going on so long, and right to this day, I said, Avon, there's no black supervisors out there. I mean, it's a shame how these places can just go on forever and nothing ever be done and said about it. Thank you.
All right, that's a good point. Let me go back on a couple of things. One, there's supposed to be psychological testing for police officers, but nobody seems to know what's in the psychological testing. If we're trying to move forward and establishing trust, is it time for law enforcement to walk the media through? What are we talking about with psychological testing? What are you testing? What are you asking for? And is there legitimately such a test that can spot either ignorance or outright bigotry or both?
I mean, I think transparency is always a good thing. I mean, I do think that that has been a question the public has had, I think, here and probably in other cities as well, about exactly what goes into the testing for police officers and all types of other training. And I do think I've sensed more of a willingness from, at least from Chief Height and some others, to kind of talk a little bit more about that. But there's still a wall there as far as what we as a public are allowed and reporters are allowed to know. But I do think it might go a long way towards at least the public understanding exactly what it takes to be a police officer in Indianapolis.
The other thing is, when Rod Bohannon, former president of the NAACP, when they took legal action against the Carmel police officers, and yes, Brainerd was mayor then, so this is a while ago. While Carmel's black population has not increased significantly since that time, the other suburbs around here, Avon, Brownsburg, Fishers particularly, have. When we're looking at profiling and when we're looking at diversity, is part of building a safer city also looking at the metropolitan area and looking at what are the actual numbers and not just numbers of patrol officers, but are there African Americans in the hierarchy? Whether it's Carmel, whether it's Fishers, whether it's Brownsburg, the perception is there's a officer of color. in those departments. That's the perception, and it may be the reality is far different. There may be more than we think. There may actually be sergeants, lieutenants, and maybe others of higher rank.
Well, I've looked a little closer at IMPD, but I have had some discussions with some of the suburban county agencies and asked them about their minority representation. We looked at Johnson County and Greenwood, both of whom were in the top 10 in the state in terms of a disproportionate arrest rate of blacks. Mm-hmm. Their populations of those two communities are like 1% and 2% minority, and they have no black officers on the street. Carmel has about 7% minority officers in their force, which is a lot higher than their actual population.
It is, yeah.
But their arrest rate for blacks was disproportionately higher than their population, according to a USA Today analysis that we just wrote about recently. I know IMPD has a couple of recruiting classes that they're proud of in terms of minority representation, but they've got a ways to go. I think their black percentage is like 13.5%. Minority overall is about 17%. They've got some work to do there, and they acknowledge as much, and Chief Hyde is aware of that, and Troy Riggs has commented on how they need to improve on that, so.
All right, back to the phones and Brother Motap at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going, Amos? Forgive if I get one blank in. I've got somebody calling and I don't want to answer, but I want to say a couple things. Roger Bohannon and a few of the other people did make some good points there. Profiling is different than public safety. But I think we need to comment on the root of the matter, the root of the genesis of racial divisions and the genesis of policing. And it goes all the way back to my parents' days, when dogs were sick on them. We know for a fact, I mean, if you just look at the 2013 FBI report, there was 600,000 whites arrested for drug-related offenses. There were roughly maybe 200-some thousand black, yet in the prison, it's 55% drug convictions are black. So that number even just blew me away. If it's way more than them arrested and we're still just pushing the prison, I mean, that tells you a lot to do with cost, economics. The system is an industry. It makes the criminal justice system makes a ton of money. Now, we'll comment on some of Indiana's changing of nonviolent laws and a lot of states around the country because of cost. And Texas now has a drug court, and they've gotten rid of they've closed three prisons in Texas, and they have drug court now to try to get those things out of the way. But my point is that there's the only way these numbers and this system can be fueled is for them to go to the weakest of people. See, people in Carmel, like the guys that put that article up, you know, in the guys' private area for those Carmel football players, look who they hired for their lawyers to get them out of that trouble. You know, I got five lawyers in my family. Mother's a lawyer, and a bunch of other people in my family are lawyers. And they talk about it all the time. The judges. Look what happened to that judge downtown last week. Look what she was doing. Look at the judge before that. Look what she was doing. I mean, the system is stacked. It's such a shame that it has to be this way. But, you know, Larry makes a great point. And if I would like the star to honestly do, you know, take it further, you want to talk about racial profiling, then go into those who are profiling. Go into them. Ask them why they have these preconceived notions. Ask them why we can look at a city like Gary that is 95% black and they have a number of white officers, yet we have not had one officer kill anybody in the line of duty. Is that because they're relating to the people better? Go and ask these folks. Get the judges. Get the prosecutors. I asked Chief Hyde about psychological exams. He didn't give me a clear answer. So we have to get past just throwing it to the wind and understand that, and it's not all. But there is an inherent fabric that has been put into the nation that certain people and people of authority have a bad attitude towards us. And why? What did we do? And I'll take the comments off here. Thanks, Amy.
I appreciate that. Y'all want to comment?
Well,
you made some great points.
I think you made some really great points. I think that I think part of the problem is I think it's a matter of police departments and law enforcement agencies turning their questions internally. I think a lot of times people don't even really know they have that bias. I really do believe that. I think there's people that obviously do that are police officers who are racist just like anybody else. But I do think there are a number of departments that don't entirely realize the way the system is actually skewed and the decks are stacked. And so I think as a news organization, we have the ability, and I think this is one thing that Ferguson has done, is to raise the question in a bigger way to get these agencies to actually start asking their questions internally and pushing their people to say, okay, why are we doing things this way?
Erica, you mentioned sometimes people don't know that they don't know. I mean, if you could use the example of Rupert Murdoch's now infamous tweet over the weekend where he was criticized, why is his movie Exodus, all the Egyptians are white? And Rupert Murdoch said, well, the only Egyptians I know are white. And everybody's going, are you out of your mind?
I would not use that as an example.
but from his frame of reference, he probably, he honestly believed that. And he probably believes that he has no animus in his heart, probably at his level of being a billionaire. The only Egyptians he know look like him. And I think he forgot Anwar Sadat, but that's a whole nother story. Anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. It's Afternoons with Amos coming up later in the week. Rodney, on Wednesday, Lamar Campbell will be here telling us about the big gospel concert that is on second Sunday out at Mount Carmel Church. We'll tell you all about that. The concert is coming from AM 1310, The Light. Also, Thursday and Friday, we'll know. I'll know tomorrow, but I can't say until Thursday how bad economics are in different Indianapolis neighborhoods. We'll have the neighborhood data from the 2013 Census American Community Survey. It goes back 5 years, 2013 to 2009, so that is the meat of the Great Recession. And we'll really see how poor are the neighborhoods surrounding the rich downtown Indianapolis. This afternoon's with Amos after these.
WTLC AM Indianapolis. Indy's choice for inspiration and praise. AM 1310, The Light.
Welcome back to the second half of Afternoons with Amos. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. Coming up this Thursday, it is a public discussion hosted by the Indianapolis Star called Building a Safer City, Racial Profiling, and more importantly, Establishing Trust Between the Community and Law Enforcement. It's going to be at 7 o'clock down at the Indianapolis Star's new home where Nordstrom's used to be at Circle Center Mall. The event will be live streamed on IndyStar.com. There's also a viewing opportunity where you can view it at Light of the World Church, Cold Spring and Michigan Road, 4646 Michigan Road. In the studio, Robert King and Erica Smith. He's a reporter. She's a columnist with the Indianapolis Star. 239-1310. 239-1310. Back to the phones. And Don, hi there.
Well, how you doing, Amos?
Fine.
To your guest. You know, we also believe that Christopher Columbus, you know, discovered America. But the system, you know, will trump any conversation you might have about racial profiling. Now, I mean, Erica mentioned the system. And the system is the bigger picture here. The Civil Rights Law of the 1960s never addressed racial profiling. I'm looking at something on the Internet right now, the ERPA, the Racial Profiling Act, that was just introduced in 2013 by Senator Benjamin Cardin, and it was introduced in 2013. He had 16 co-sponsors. Congressman John Connors introduced it in 2013 of July, and he has 54 co-sponsors. You know, the problem that I'm having is if this is just now being addressed in the year 2013 when this has been going on for centuries. And then the other thing is they keep talking about we need more black police officers. Well, there's one thing I know about a black police officer. He may be, like I said, they may hire a black police officer, but he has to respect the code of silence. And the policeman, that's part of a system. So you can have all the black police officers you want, but if they're up under this code of silence, then you really never really get the justice that you want. Thank you.
All right. Good points. Let me go to Lee at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, hi, Mr. Brown. I was just following the comment. There's still a lot of racial profiling, especially in the court system, like in courtroom six, the judge, Amy Jones. I had a case there like about 3 or 4 months ago because I had some grown kids living in my house and being disrespectful. And when they're being disrespectful, want to put their hands up to their mother, and then to me, and I go correct them, I go in front of the judge, and the judge, Amy Jones, going to let them get away with it and punish me, give me community service, and give me time. But the kids are still being off the hook. And right now, they drive my wife crazy. She can't do nothing with them. They just, they're very bad. And the judges know it. And the judge looked dead at me and told me she didn't believe nothing that I said, that she don't believe these kids. That's why we got these kids right today just out doing all kind of bad things, killing people, killing policemen, and they wonder what can they do to stop it. It's too late. They took prayer out of school, and they let the kids get away with everything. They have no consequences. So,
let me ask a question, Lee. This was a case with the Department of Child Services?
I call them the circus. Up on 41st and Keystone, they are ridiculous. I have told them about the situation there, my wife, but they still don't want to do anything.
What did they charge you with?
They charged me with a battery after the kids got in, the child got in my face. She was 22 years old. She wants to get in my face, cussing me out and swinging on me. So I go to restrain her, and I get in trouble.
Wait a minute. The child is 23 years old.
Well, she was 21 at the time. Hmm.
Why is DCS in a case on a 21-year-old? That's an adult.
They are just ridiculous. The whole system is designed to let these kids tear up your home and tear up society, and they wonder what can they do about it. You need to start punishing these kids and make them suffer and give them consequences. You can't keep coming after the adults if they've been disrespectful to us, because the minute they be disrespectful to the policemen, they're going to shoot them and kill them down. There's nothing we can do about it. But yet, you raise these kids after 17, 18 years, the system will tell you, you can't do nothing to them. I think it's just dumb. They need to change the law, and half of them judges down there needs to be out somewhere directing traffic on a busy highway.
on the case of moving forward, what would you have the law change? Would it have you allow you to strike a child?
Well, not a child, but a grown-up. If a child is over 19 years old, they want to be disrespectful and want to cuss you out and stand nose-to-nose to you and call you out a kind of name, you got every right to beat the little butt. But the way the system is, nah, they don't want you whooping them and beating them, but yet they can do anything they want to do.
You know, I know you can't hit them. That's an adult, and that is adult battery. So I get that part of it. And they're not a child, but it was seemed to me you have the right to expel them off your property. You have the right to take not the use of force, but you have the right to take legal action to not have get a non-contact order or those kind of things.
Yeah, but the system just allow these kids to do whatever.
But remember, if they're 19, 20, 21, they're not kids anymore.
Exactly right. And,
but
wife is very lenient.
That sounds like a potential story for the Indianapolis Star Invest. I heard y'all got investigators now. Y'all trying to copy the TV stations. Because why would DCS be involved in a case of adult age young people? That's not making any sense.
Were there other children in the home?
I know.
Were there other children in the home at the time?
Well, yes, at the time it was like a 17-year-old. And he's just as bad as his sisters, man.
But you were not charged with doing anything to the 17-year-old?
No, I was
okay, all right.
I restrained him from putting his hands on me, but the system's still like, well, you shouldn't have touched him, but yet he can touch me and get all in my face and call me.
I got it.
Which, that is not right. You know, kids don't get in parents' face calling and cussing them out.
They may need to change the law to deal with Bebe's kids. I get that. I appreciate it, Lee. Thank you. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
I have a little situation over here at Lincoln Apartments for Veterans. We had a fire here Thanksgiving morning early. It took the fire department about 15 to 20 minutes before they came out. So we're trying to figure out who to contact in violation or what would you advise us to do. We've got problems here.
So wait a minute. What happened Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving morning, we were awakened by the fire alarm.
Okay.
The fire in one of the residence apartments.
Okay.
The fire department 10 to 20 minutes to get here. When I went out to the fire hydrant, it wasn't connected.
Mm-hmm. The fire, the fire hydrant was not working at all.
No,
and this, all right, this was Indianapolis Fire Department.
That came, yes.
Okay, and where's the Lincoln Apartments at?
530 North Holmes Avenue.
Where?
530 North Holmes Avenue.
Okay.
All right. And
how much? How much damage was done?
Two apartments, the hallway. Hold on.
Hello.
Two or three apartments that was damaged. The apartment that was damaged where the fire started, and the alarm panel was not lit up. But
I got it. So let me ask you this: what's the problem today?
The problem is that the building is not being monitored by Indianapolis Fire Department because they should have been here earlier than 20 minutes.
And this was Thanksgiving morning.
This was Thanksgiving morning.
And the response time, was 20 minutes?
The response time was 20 minutes, and the fire department is right here on Warman Street, right down there, right up of Washington.
But you don't know whether the truck that's on Warman was out at another fire?
No, it wasn't up there because the manager that's the manager, he called them their sales, and they came right when he called.
Have you talked with anybody at the fire department?
No, I haven't.
And this was
this past Thursday.
Thursday, about what time?
About between the hours of 7 and 8 o'clock.
7 to 8 a.m.
Yes.
5:30.
I would say between 6:30 and 7:30.
Between 6:30 and 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And do you, all right. And do you know when the first 911 call was made from somebody at the apartment?
The first 911 calls were made from somebody's phone. When I looked at my clock, it was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it said 6:40.
6:40 a.m.
The gentleman next door was going out the back door, and he was calling. And at that time, the apartment, the property manager that was here was calling at the same time. And as he was calling, the dispatch was dispatching the fire trucks to come out. And as we was coming out around to the front of the apartment, the police officer from the West Side District was pulling up at the time that the fire truck was pulling up.
All right. Was the Red Cross engaged after this was over with to help the people?
Did nobody else show up?
No one from the Red Cross?
No one from the Red Cross showed up. The alarm system here. Because it's a state-of-the-art alarm system handicapped veterans here.
How old is this building? Is this a new building?
This is a brand new building. It's a year old. It has a state-of-the-art fire system with sprinklers and a fire alarm system that when the alarm goes off, it should automatically dispatch a fire department from two or three different departments to come into this building automatically.
All right, I tell you what we're going to do, okay? This may be the Lord looks out for veterans, first of all, because not only am I sitting here getting ready to take your name and number off the air, okay, but I'm going to share it with the folks that are here from the Indianapolis Star. And I bet one of their ace investigative reporters will get a hold, one, of the fire department, two, the 911 tapes, because they keep the tapes.
Yeah, amen.
Okay, so they will know when it couldn't be that many 911 calls on Thanksgiving morning.
Amen.
Unless there were people calling trying to find the phone number for the Moselle Sanders. I want you to hold in. You're a resident of the building, correct?
Yes. I'm a resident in the building.
All right. What I want you to do is hold on. I want you to give Drew your name. And
okay.
Then they also give me the name of the young lady that originally called me before they put you on the phone.
Okay.
And I need a phone number where you can be reached during the day.
Okay.
Okay.
And I give you the best time to call me because I'm a student also, so I give you the best time to call me.
Oh, no. Give me both numbers. Give me your number and the young lady's number.
Okay.
Okay. So hold on. And while we do that, allow me to take a break at 239-1310. And the editor of the Star is going to owe me one for this scoop y'all getting.
We appreciate it.
He don't know the bill I'm sending. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. Talk about racial profiling, but a brand new 1-year-old building and the alarm system didn't work and the sprinkler and the hydrant didn't work and there was a 24-minute poor response time of the fire department? We'll look into all that too. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
Hello, this is Councilman Joseph Simpson for District 9, and you're listening to The Afternoon Show with Amos Brown on AM 1310 The Light.
And we just got off the phone with our good friend, Captain Rita Reif, who's the person that deals with media with the Indianapolis Fire Department. She's really good people, and she's tracking this down to find out what's going on. But let's get back to the subject at hand. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me go to Counselor Joe Simpson. Hi, Counselor.
Hey, Amos.
How are you?
I'm good, man. Wanted to talk about this council meeting tonight, about the issues.
We're trying to talk about racial profiling, and you tried to sneak on the council meeting.
Well, you know, this is about crime.
Oh, it's about crime. Okay.
Yeah. Right. You know, the pre-K. Remember what you said early on in your I've been online with you the whole time.
Okay.
And you said pre-K was to start to fight crime, right?
Yeah.
Well, the issue for the council is that we're $40 million in the hole. We have, this is an emergency need, which you were talking about. We need at least 500 new police. We just increased the police tax to get it there. We also have a need for the animal control center down there, which they don't have a director or a veterinarian down there.
And they don't
have food. But the point is, the guardian ad litem is off the chain right now. It is millions and millions of dollars in the hole because of the crime that's going on in the community. And that's an ongoing, you can call, you know, Judge Moore out there, the juvenile center. It is so rapid out there right now that the example they gave me was a 9-year-old kid came in, wanted to get a divorce from his parents because they were on drugs. And it's growing and growing. These are emergency needs, and pre-K is nowhere near the emergency needs that we're facing right now.
I don't want Erica Smith to bust a gasket while she's here.
Well, she can bust a gasket.
No, now be nice, counselor. My goodness,
from here? Is she from Indianapolis?
She's listening to you right now.
This is what Indianapolis needs. This is what I see. I grew up in this community. I know what's going on in this community.
Because
people that say that it's not going to turn into a Ferguson, what's going to get it to a Ferguson is you keep ignoring this community.
Now, let me ask you a couple things. Erica's colleague, Jill Dices, with the Indianapolis Star, just tweeted out that the Department of Public Safety estimates to get the body cams, which now the President of the United States is saying, hey, maybe we need to deal with this across the country, and maybe there's some federal funds to help. That's going to cost $2 million.
There you go. All I'm saying is that there are so many emergency needs. It's what my colleague just said to me. These are today's needs. This is not tomorrow. It's not 10 years. These are what I'm facing in my community that needs to be done right now, and we need to deal with it. And the point is that people around here act like the city is rich. The city is in the hole.
It doesn't have money.
Let me
ask this to kind of move this discussion along and maybe break some news at the same time. Are there the votes for this thing to pass tonight for the pre-K?
Don't know. They're calling me like they need my vote. And I'm just saying to you is that pre-K, I mean, I understand it. It's just like the vouchers and everything. But right now, the city has some emergency needs, and the emergency need today is police and probation, things that we need that people don't know that the probation, our adult probation is on probation through the state. The state got them on probation because they're not making enough home visits.
That's
news. That's what they should be chasing.
All right, at approaching 2:30, are you undecided or are you a no?
I'm a no.
You're a no. All right.
Because I have other emergency needs, and I'm an administrator. I do finances. And when you got, it's just like your checkbook. It's like Erica's checkbook. Anybody's checkbook out here. You only got so much money to do so much. And we like to do it. There's a wish list of whole things I like to do. But you got to do it. I have to pay my rent. I have to pay my utilities. I have to buy my food. It's the same thing with the city. You got to take care of public safety. You got to take care of this. You got to take care of that. So for people to act like this is the most emergency need out there, they're wrong. Our job as council people is to ensure that the taxes that we get go to the entities to deal with the situation that we are facing. And we've been facing this for years.
All right. The two other very, very quick questions. One, is this meeting going to last longer than Monday Night Football tonight? Is this a long meeting tonight?
I don't think it's going to be.
All right, and then the other question is, you're one of the co-sponsors of the billboard ordinance. Is that coming up, or is that
I'm not a co-sponsor on that billboard. I don't know why. I mean, I was co-sponsor on the original one that didn't get introduced. And it was a joint effort of Aaron Freeman, which is a Republican, and I, we had a coalition of people, and ours wasn't set up the way that this digital billboard was set up. Well, that this one was done by Bowles McKinney, you know,
Martin,
and they were talking about turning those billboards in those communities into physical boards. Our proposal was the opposite. We take down those billboards in those communities based on every digital board they put up. That was not going to be put in no community. It was going to be put on major highways, major streets. But this one, the greed took over because those entities wanted to put up more digital billboards. And my proposal didn't have that in it. And I was a little salty about it. And that's a no. That proposal is, from what I understand, is trying to get sent back to committee.
All right. I appreciate it. We got a council update. See the news we make? Y'all, I get folks from the Star. We're making all kinds of news today.
Trust, we can.
Trust me, the bill the editor's getting is going to be a long one. Let me go. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Mayhem at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
Hey, I'm listening to your show. Listen to all the talented 10 call in. I got two solutions. Here's what we can do.
Okay. We love solutions.
Dealing with that pastor, was that an experiment, or did the police really pull him over?
If you're talking about Theron Williams?
Theron Williams.
Yeah.
No, he got pulled over three times within an hour. I think actually it's probably less than an hour. He was going to visit somebody who was ailing, had been in the hospital, and, you know, he said three times before he could get from North Shadeland to the south side. So he gave up and went home.
Well, good. I hope the police keep on pulling him over.
Why would you say that?
Can I explain?
Huh?
Can I explain?
Yeah, why?
If the police keep on pulling over the towns of 10 in our city, some will get done instead of talking about it. And also the second solution, don't citizens know in the city that you can sue a police individual? You go after their property and they'll leave you alone. Thank you, my friend.
I'm not sure that is what the law says, but that's an interesting point. If a police officer pulls someone over for an inappropriate or wrong reason, is there civil liability, or is the law structured in such a way that you can't have civil, the city has no civil liability?
I would think the department might be liable. I don't think the individual officer would be.
I didn't think so either. 239-1310. We go back to the phones with Robert King and Erica Smith of the Star and Bobby. Hi there.
Yes. I was burglarized a year ago. And, I called the detective, and the detective told me I couldn't file a report because I knew the person who burglarized my apartment. So when you had the chief on your show, I talked to the chief, and he said that detective was wrong. So when I talked to the chief, he said he would have detective get a hold of me. It's been almost a year now.
How important, in terms of building trust, Erica Smith, is the follow-up? In other words, if a chief of police, because this is not something that is just germane to the chief of the day. We could go back to a number of different chiefs being on this and other programs. Somebody called in, they get the number and information, and then they'll follow up. How important is the follow up?
I think it's extremely important, and it's not just about when the chief makes a promise at a forum, because I'm sure he tries to do those all the time. But I think it's on the little things. I did a column a few months ago about some moms who had lost their sons to gun violence, and at least two of them had said that they could not get a hold for months of the officers who were leading the investigation. Yeah. And I know that's a common story that happens a lot, and I don't know how, as a police department, we can build trust within the community if we're not even following up for things, for crimes that have already happened.
Should it be something where if the detective on the case is busy with other cases, that there is a civilian or a paralegal or somebody that has access to the information that can at least follow up with families of victims or follow up with somebody that, you know, a high-ranking officer said, hey, somebody will get back to you?
Yeah, I think it should be something. I mean, you can't have families calling and basically getting a black hole of no information, leaving messages for months at a time. It could be civilians. It could be some other procedure that could be put in place. But obviously, whatever's in place right now is not working really well.
Is part of it our, as part of looking at building a safer city, is this series going to include, and whether it's working with your sister newspapers in other cities, seeing are there some best practices? We may be in, you're in Nashville, you're in Detroit, Jacksonville, Florida, obviously USA Today has national resources in terms of are there some departments doing it right?
Yeah, that's something we've talked about. We don't just want to keep our focus here on the ground in Indy, but what is working elsewhere? And there's plenty of things. For an example, there's a big issue with mental health and people winding up in jail who need to be being treated for mental health issues. And I've heard some progress locally on that, but there's actually departments around the country that have clinics and jails connected, so they can, if someone doesn't need to be in a jail but they need a clinic, they can be sent in that direction. And those are the things we need to look at and take our gaze away from Indianapolis sometimes.
In the USA Today data, they looked obviously at a number of cities and communities across the country. Did they look at state police? And the reason I bring that up is there's a, again, we're dealing with perceptions. Mm-hmm. There's been a perception that the Indiana State Police isn't like local police. You don't hear some of these same complaints on a regular basis about the, that's not to say it doesn't happen, but about the Indiana State Police.
I've heard that as well. The recent analysis USA Today did not include the Indiana State Police.
Or any state police organization.
Right.
State police.
I'm not aware of other states, but I know I look for the ISP and didn't see them.
All right, let me go back to the 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. We'll take a break. Come back with our remaining moments. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
I'm Maxine Bryan, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
All right, 239-1310, 239-1310. We got information on the fire, and evidently it was on Thanksgiving morning. Fire department responded at 7:42, arrived on the scene at 7:45. They came from the fire station on West 10th Street near Belmont. Engine 1 and Ladder 1, and that means it's from fire station number 1. According to the fire department, they arrived on a possible apartment fire. They found a 3-story apartment building with nothing showing. Evacuation in progress. Fire department was advised by a resident there was smoke on the second floor. Fire personnel made their way to the second floor where they met with black smoke coming from apartment 221. They entered the apartment, discovered a sofa had been on fire and had been extinguished by the building sprinkler system. And the fire crews left the scene at 8:12 and 8:30. I think folk are going to look into this a little more. There's some discrepancies here. Maybe Dave, who worked for the fire department, can give me some guidance. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Amos. That was my fire engine. That was you? Company I worked for.
Was it more than one damage to more than one apartment or just apartment 221?
Well, Amos, I've been retired for 8 years, so I have no idea. But
okay.
I can tell you one thing, that if a 911 phone call came in, it should have been nothing less than about 7 minutes response time.
Right.
I think if you called Rita Wright, she would tell you that's pretty much the city's average, probably less than 7 minutes. And it sounds like they did everything. Protocol was followed correctly. I don't know. You see, the fire department, they leased the fire hydrants. And it's up to the Indianapolis Water Company to fix those hydrants. And what they normally do if a hydrant is out of service, they call, they send out a bulletin to firehouses, and if that's in your district, you write it down, and you know it's out of service.
But what we're hearing from the fire department was there was an internal sprinkler system in the building.
Yeah.
That dealt mm-hmm. with the particular fire. Now, if there's a discrepancy between what people in the building think that they call 911 mm-hmm. and the time of response, that's real simple. Listen to the night, the sheriff
the
and
tape
the fire department
the
listen to the
tell
tapes.
You everything. And, I mean, that's all those calls are taped, and they can tell you exactly the second that phone call came in. Now, if there's something wrong with the alarm system in the building that it didn't send out an automatic signal to the fire department, that's a different ballgame. But if it came across 911 They know exactly when it went out, when they dispatched him, and when they arrived.
All right. I want to thank them, my friends with the fire department for their very fast response, getting that information back in terms of the response. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave, also for that. Let me go to Karen right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos.
Hi.
I'm going to come at this from maybe a different angle, but I think it's related.
Okay.
You know, it's quick to jump to say, you know, of course, we all want jobs, and we want to stop racial profiling. But what I find with the youth today, and sometimes I substitute teach, is respect. And respect is a two-way street. And, you know, I've been in classrooms with middle schoolers and high schoolers, and, you know, quite honestly, there's no respect for the teacher. So here's a teacher. And, you know, you can't compare a teacher to a police officer, but you can see at different levels that there seems to be no respect for authority. And regardless of what you think about police, and sometimes, you know, in the household, parents will talk about, you know, the police, and that carries over to the children. You know, now children are getting involved in adult conversations. So there's, you know, no respect for authority, period. So that's going to have some kind of effect if you're talking about racial profiling, because the police officer is anticipating something. And if I'm to believe what Officer Darren Wilson said, where he said to Michael Brown, hey, can you come over here? And then then Michael Brown said, called him out of his name, you know, that put everything at a heightened level there. And then, as like I said, with a teacher, it has happened to me. Students will come up to me like, you know, they want to start a conflict. So
I get all that. Let me ask a question. And going back to American history, mm-hmm. to Chicago in late August of 1968. Mm-hmm. So was it allowable for police officers to attack civilians who were cussing? I'm talking about whites who were white young people who were cussing police officers out, and then those police officers retaliated by charging into a mob of demonstrators. We're talking about the demonstrations at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968.
Oh, absolutely not, because I was around in 1968, and I remember it. Absolutely not.
So what is the difference between those young people not showing respect for police and young African-Americans not doing that? What's the difference?
Oh, there is no difference. I'm just saying that we need to get back to, you know, kids need to respect authority.
I don't disagree with that, but why does that give a police officer the right to assume that any African American, mm-hmm. not just a kid, but a grown adult, is going to be disrespectful? Why would they assume that? And even if they were even if they were disrespectful, doesn't that go with the territory?
Yeah, and they should be bigger than that. They in their training, they should know how to perform better. They should be above that. I mean, I was driving through Carmel and got pulled over, and I said, you know, okay, my bad. I know I was speeding. I didn't see the speed limit. And the police officer asked me, hey, how many times have you been pulled over? And I'm thinking, what does that have to do with anything? But, you know, I didn't, you know, get disrespectful. I thought the question was disrespectful, but I had to, you know, be put on a different hat and say, let me just get through this, just like give me the ticket and I'll move on. They need to be bigger than that.
All right. I get your point. I'm confused, but then I didn't get much sleep last night. I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Okay, the forum is Thursday, which is the 4th.
Correct.
Right? 7 o'clock. How do people sign up? How do people attend?
You can go online, and we have actually there's a couple of links we've been putting out, but basically if you search for building a safer city, go to indystar.com. buildingasafercity.com, and you can find it. You can sign up there, or you can just basically come to the Star. You don't necessarily have to sign up.
All right, and you enter off Meridian Street where the little restaurant that Nordstrom's used to have, right, mm-hmm. right just before you get to Georgia Street on the west side of Meridian Street. That's the entrance?
That is the entrance. You can park in the mall, or you can park on the street if you can find a spot.
Oh, y'all got the entrance where they used to have in the mall?
Mm-hmm.
Where Nordstrom's was? What? I have to go find out that y'all have a Black Friday sale going on. But again, the event is this coming Thursday, 7 o'clock at the Star's new headquarters where Nordstrom's used to be, down at Circle Center. It's going to be streamed on live on IndyStar.com or just go to Light of the World Christian Church, just before 7 o'clock and you can see it live on the church's big screen. 239-13. Let's sneak one more call in here for, Robert King and Erica Smith. See, we worked them to death and given them story ideas. Yeah, just tell the editor, yeah, the bill. Let me go. Anonymous will be the last caller. Hi, Anonymous. You got a minute.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I personally don't feel that we need 500 more policemen.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to, put our work resources, monies more into, crime prevention, the drugs, and the guns. There are way too many guns out there. The drugs, usually criminals, you know, are on them, and I don't feel like we're dealing with that much at all.
You know, and every time Erica Smith writes about that, she gets 8 million emails from people that disagree with her and you.
Well, that's just the way I feel.
She appreciates that.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
There's a lot of folks that would agree with your caller here that it's not just about police. There's folks who would also like to see a lot more police. But even how the counselor spoke earlier, this is a big issue. It goes to pre-K and early childhood education, and it goes to eliminating the demand for drugs, and there's a lot of facets to the problem.
One final question. Is this effort by the Star, Building a Safer City, part of what I'm beginning to suspect all the media in town are doing next year, first open mayor's race in 16 years? Is this going to be part of this great civic conversation on where does this city go in the next 4 to 8 years? Because when you have an open mayor's race, that is really that opportunity for the residents to really take a step back and say, where do we really want to go?
I think that the Star has actually been doing that for longer than just these past few months, but I would think that we would continue next year, particularly because all those issues will be coming up during the mayor's race. I mean, everything from public safety to education to all these issues that feed into this problem. So yes, I would expect us to continue doing forums and working with our partners at Fox 59 to do so as well.
Yeah, I would add that my position at the Star was created. It's called a community crime fighter to write about.
Were you trying to be the next Steve Jefferson?
Well, we can all aspire so high, but my job, and we've got 6 reporters focused on public safety issues. So this is going to be a big deal for us. And yes, next year is a mayoral race, and there's going to be a lot of discussion about public safety as part of that. We hope to dispel the myths, as you talked about earlier.
Robert King with the Indianapolis Star. What's the title?
Building Safer City.
But the title of your job.
My job. Community crime fighter. I wrote a column about this. I get a cape and tights and all that stuff.
See, that's one of the payments that the editor, he can send a list of who does what now at the paper. So if something comes up, see, you can call this reporter and get with them.
Yeah,
and Erica Smith is a columnist for the Indianapolis Star. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad
thanks
to have you.
Thanks, Amos.